Blog Talk Radio.
Of All Hell Hair, proudly part of the Fighting Words Radio Network. I'm your co-host Bob Carroll, and tonight, once again, sitting in the co-host seats is my main co-host Francis, and also the guy who helps me an awful lot, and will be very familiar to all our listeners, Dio Priest Radio's Alex Alvarez. Alex, how are you?
I'm good, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Francis. How you doing tonight? You there? All right, I guess we're having some difficulties with Francis there. Alex, once again, tell our listeners how they can hear Dio Priest Radio.
Well, you can hear it here on Blog Talk Radio Sunday through Thursday at 8 p.m. on the East Coast, and also Saturday nights at 11 p.m. And also the Dio Priest Radio Network, the online station I was telling you about, will be launching next week.
Beautiful. Now, of course, tonight we welcome Terry Glaze, a person who has been in the music business for years and has been a part of one of the most legendary bands in music history, Pantera. the original voice of the band. He led them through three albums before leaving the band in 1985. In 1986, he joined the band that he is still recording with, Lord Tracy, as well as his own solo recordings, which we'll get into tonight. We started off tonight with All Over Tonight from Pantera's second album, Projects in the Jungle, a great song off of one of three great albums by Pantera. Now, if you want to join the show tonight, call in to speak to us or to Terry, make sure you give us a call at 347-202-0832, and the phone lines are open. Speaking of phone lines, now joining us is the original voice of Pantera, Mr. Terry Glaze. Terry, how are you doing?
Really good. How you doing, Bob?
Excellent. You know, first of all, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. Of course, the day after Thanksgiving, and hopefully you had a real good Thanksgiving.
I did. How about you?
Perfect. You know, family, all the family got together, and you know, it was a great time. It's always good when you get together with family, and even if Francis, who's my brother, is on the other end there. He's out in Utah. We still got to talk to him, and you know, so it's always good when you get the family unit together.
That's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Now, Terry, as a vocalist, can you talk about some of your musical inspirations?
Sure. I was born in the mid-60s. My mom had a record player, and there was what I remember in particular was a Beach Boys record and a Beatles album and a couple of Elvis records. And when I was a little kid, I would play those records over and over and over, and that kind of got me hooked on music from the very beginning. I think I was lucky to hear such great music from the very beginning.
Sure.
And we play those records over and over and over.
Yeah, it's funny. You're talking about the vinyls, too, where, you know, you could only play so many times. You know, you could play those records over and over and over before you had to go out and get another one. But I know what you mean about continuous play of those things. And, you know, you named some of the greatest vocalists of all time there. Now, in 1981, I want to get right into to Pantera. In 1981, you helped form Pantera with bassist Rex Brown, who was then, when you guys recorded, was known as Rex Rocker. Guitarist Daryl Abbott, then known as Diamond Daryl, then changing his name, of course, to the name we all know, Dimebag Daryl, and drummer Vinnie Paul. It seemed that Brown and the Abbotts were pretty much schoolmates. Did that include you also? Were you also growing up with them?
Yeah, we all went to the same schools. Actually, right before Rex, we had an original bass player named Tommy Bradford. And Tommy and Vince were in the school band. And I wanted to play with Vince.
Okay.
And we were all in the same grade back in Arlington, Texas, at Bowie High School. And I saw Vince play in the school band, and he was the best drummer. He was amazing. And Tommy and I wanted to jam with Vince. And so we got together with Vince, and we decided to form a band. But the only way Vince would agree would be if we took his little brother, Daryl, who was in, like, junior high. And we were in high school, so we were like, I don't know. And we got together, and he was okay, you know. And we got together, and we started playing, you know, Def Leppard and AC/DC and
beautiful
stuff like that, and learning how to rock. And Daryl was this little kid with this huge hairdo, and he had a Hohner Les Paul copy or something like that, and a Sun Beta lead. And that little kid had the hugest tone, even at the very beginning days. And we used to play songs and learn stuff and, you know, play parties and skating rink and stuff like that and just kept practicing and playing and playing and playing. And our senior year, Tommy Bradford wanted to be the school drum major, and he didn't have time to do both, so he dropped out. Rex Brown went to school across the road, and we knew him. He was really, you know, the only one we could think of. He was great. And so we called Rex, and he stepped in, and the four of us started playing. And let's see, the Abbott brothers, their daddy was a recording engineer. And so we started recording early on, and that's where those records came from. We learned how to play in the studio, and the dad was so supportive, and we'd go out and play gigs every weekend all over the state of Texas. And that's how we learned our chops and cut our teeth, was in little bars and skanky things in throughout the whole state of Texas, rocking, you know, whether it was on the weekends or five nights a week in Houston and San Antonio. And, you know, it was really cool. It was a great time growing up for us. We were young. Drinking age was 18. We were 16, 17, 18. Daryl was 15 or whatever. And it was a great experience, and it was a wild adventure, that's for sure.
Now, how did you guys come up with the name Pantera? It's sort of like, you know, from what I saw, I had to look it up on the actual name of the band. I had to look up on Wikipedia, and I'm not sure if that's absolutely positive. It says it's some kind of romance or something.
Names were always the hardest thing for us to come up with. And everybody remembers things differently, but I remember it being one of Daryl's friends came up with the idea. And somebody brought it up, and we all were like, yeah, great, whatever. And it stuck, and then we liked it the more and more we went on. And that's how I remember the story anyway. Whether that's what really happened or not, that's the way I remember it.
It's a great name. I mean, it sticks. The first time you hear it, you're not going to forget it.
There was a real cool muscle car called a Pantera, and that part came from it. And in Pantera is like, I think it could be Latino for Panther also, and those kind of words.
Yes, I heard that. Yeah.
From. Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah.
Now, along with being a vocalist, I also heard that you played some rhythm guitar, but I think when you and I talked earlier, you said that. Daryl became, and you mentioned it earlier here, Daryl became so good that really he took the forefront on the guitar playing in the band. Did you do any kind of live play on any of the records or any of the live shows?
Yeah, I played rhythm guitar on the first album, Metal Magic, and that was our first, you know, attempt. And then the second and the third record, by that time Daryl had progressed. He was such a monster that I could never play as good as him. So he took over and did all the stuff on from Projects in the Jungle on. Live, I played rhythm guitar, and we had, you know, a big live show with fire and pyro and smoke, and it was real cool.
Nice.
But mainly for the originals, Daryl played that. When we'd play covers, we'd play two guitar, you know, part songs. And
sure.
I was lucky enough to get to play, you know, guitar with Daryl. I don't know anybody else who got to do that. It was a great experience.
Nice. That's
Daryl,
great.
I would say that when Daryl was a little kid, he went in his room and started woodshedding for about 6 months. And when he came out of that, 6 months later, he was basically fully evolved. He could play anything at that young age.
You want to talk to us?
Yeah, sure.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's great.
I need some women in the background.
Love you
there.
Too. Y'all get something cold to drink would be good. Okay.
Now, when did you guys start to see that the band was just more like a garage band or a band that you just mess around with? You guys really had the talent to make it to the next level.
You know, from the very beginning, I don't know if we were just so naive or so driven or a combination of everything. But we never wanted to be the best band in our hometown. We figured that the next Van Halen had to come from somewhere, and it might as well be us.
Yeah.
And all we did was practice and play, and worked. We worked our asses off, and I mean, it wasn't an accident. I mean, lots of bands work hard, and not all bands make it. But it wasn't an accident that Pantera got so huge. There was a lot of work and blood and guts put into that, and it was great to get to play with those guys because, you know, when you're on stage with guys who are that good, it feels really good to be that powerful and know that you're doing something special.
Nice. Now, in 83, you got Pantera released its first album, Metal Magic. As young as you guys were back then, how did you guys find the time to actually record this album?
83. We were all still living at home. Vince and Daryl's dad would get us in the recording studio whenever there was free time. So we'd go in late at night and cut tunes, and then Daryl and Vince and all of us and their dad, we'd all, you know, figure it out, and then we put out vinyl albums, and they were all completely homemade, and we would sell them off the bandstand wherever we were playing that following weekend. You know, back then there wasn't any internet or
sure.
you know, CDs or anything like that, and so the heavy metal bands were just in like little magazines, and we would send our stuff into those magazines to get reviewed just like everybody else. And you know, you'd see your name, your album reviewed next to the Anthrax album or Slayer or Metallica or whatever. And you know, nobody knew what we were doing. We're making up as we go, but that's what we were doing. We just wanted to make music. We'd make records and get the music out there.
Now, you mentioned Vinny and Daryl's father, Jerry Abbott.
Yeah.
He produced and released the bands on I'm sorry, released the records on the band's own label, also named Metal Magic. How was the first album received, Metal Magic being the first album? How was that received?
Well, all of our fans and everybody, you know, supported us, but we knew it was just the very first step. And, you know, we grew so much from record to record. But, I mean, it, you know, everybody's first attempt is never as good as you want it to be, but it was a good experience for us to learn how to go through the process, and it also gave us something to promote and an excuse to get out there and play and tour. But as soon as you finish it, you're looking forward to doing the next one.
Now, I know Francis, my co-host here, he has a question. Go ahead, Francis.
Yeah, Terry, just kind of to get back to Daryl, when you guys formed, there's a story out that he was actually barred from guitar competitions because he was so good and he gave no one the chance to win. Is that correct?
Yeah. The first guitar contest, excuse me, I can't remember who put it on, and we all went. We were all dressed up. We all went, and Daryl was so much better than anyone else. You know, even with all the politics involved in competitions like shows on television today, you know, with singing or dancing or whatever, you know, it was still so obvious that Daryl was so good. He won the first competition, and I believe he won that ML that ended up the famous later one, the blue one with the lightning bolt. I believe he won that ML. Then the next guitar show, he won again. I think he won a Charvel in that one. And after the second one, they all got together, all the people putting him on, and they decided that it wasn't fair. And Daryl became a judge, and he was still just a little scrawny little guy, little teenager. But that was the only way, because no one could even come close to Daryl. But yeah, that guitar, everybody maybe has heard the stories about it, but Daryl won that. It was a maroon Dean ML, and I think he ended up, I want to say he ended up selling it or something. I don't know how it worked out. And then eventually, one of our friends, a guitar builder named Buddy Blaze, ended up with that guitar, tricked it all out with the blue paint and the lightning bolts and everything, and they ended up giving it back to Daryl. And it wasn't until after Daryl got it that they all figured out that that's the same guitar that you won originally. It seems like it should be ultimately end up back in Daryl's hands. And that was the famous one that Daryl ended up playing that's been cloned, and, you know, you can see those when you open up any kind of, you know, Guitar Center magazine or whatever, you know. But that is true.
Nice.
Daryl smoked everybody. He had no, he did not take it easy on anybody.
Now, with you guys having your first album, did you see an increase in your, you know, and especially selling the albums off the stage and through your friends and everything like that? Did you guys start to see a bigger crowd come to your gigs?
Yeah. We just played and played and played and supported it and kept touring the same markets. And every time we'd play, hopefully those people would tell their friends and a few more people would come back. And we basically played a circuit on the whole state of Texas, which is so big that you could come back around to the same town every 5 or 6 weeks and not burn out your market, you know. But we basically just played all over the whole state and just over and over and over and over again. Eventually branched into the side states like Louisiana and Oklahoma and stuff like that. But, yes, it was a long, slow burn that we were trying to build it up. And it just seemed to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
I gotcha. Now, of course, later the next year, you released your next album, Project in the Jungle. And it seemed like it was a bit of a heavier sound than the Metal Magic. The sound of Pantera was starting to shape. How proud were you guys that you guys had two albums underneath your belt?
It felt good, and that record, we liked it a lot. You know, the influences on the first album were coming through, where we maybe were listening to April Wine and things like that coming in the first album, but by the second album, we had discovered Motley Crue and Iron Maiden, and I remember those in particular were big influences on us, and you know, the style of the music and the style of the singing started to get a little bit more edgy, and you know, so it was just a progression on what we had started.
I got you. Now, that just kind of threw me back there with April Wine. Good, great Canadian group.
Yeah. We played everything. Now, we played every kind of music there was.
That's perfect. Nice. Now, as lead vocalist, how much input did you have in writing both the Metal Magic, Projects in the Jungle, and the third one, All Over Tonight?
Well, on the first record, most of the records, the way we did it is either I wrote all the music and the lyrics, or Daryl and Vince and his dad would write the songs. So it kind of split them. And very rarely did we write songs together. Usually I went off and wrote my stuff, and then the Abbotts wrote tunes. And sometimes their dad would write lyrics and put them together.
Okay.
And, you know, you're just a big team effort, everybody kind of throwing stuff in together.
That's good. That's real good. Now, we opened up the show tonight with All Over Tonight from Projects in the Jungle. Was this song one of the songs that really stuck out for you on the album?
I always loved that record. Daryl's riff was so good. And that record, I can't remember when he got this Floyd Rose on that ML, but that record has such killer guitar parts on it. But, yeah, you know, strange thing about that song, earlier this year, Rex Brown has a new band out, and he was doing a show in Dallas last April. And I haven't played with Rex since, I don't know, 25 years. And he called me, and I went into Dallas, and I got on stage with him and his band, and we played that song on stage, and it sounded really awesome. I was really kind of surprised because I didn't know if we'd be able to pull it off. But
nice.
But that song, you know, it kind of brought back a lot of memories.
Nice. Now, the band continued to record in 85. You guys came out with probably the heaviest of the three releases that you were included with Pantera, I Am the Night. Did you see that the band was on the verge of changing its sound, or did you feel the band was on the verge of changing its sound?
Absolutely. Around that time or just before, Daryl, we had gone to see Metallica. We had heard about them. We drove out to East Texas, I think Tyler, can't remember, and we saw this band, and it really was a big deal to everyone, but especially Daryl. Daryl met those guys, and I know a couple times that James and Lars flew into Dallas-Fort Worth to hang out with Daryl, and they used to jam in Daryl's garage. So, I mean, it was definitely a really big influence, and you could feel the music. We were becoming more and more influenced by heavier and heavier stuff, including, like, Judas Priest and UFO and Metallica. I mean, we were playing a Metallica song every night just because, you know, Daryl loved it. And the music, just like the first record was different than the second one, the third record was definitely headed in that direction. There was no doubt about it.
I got you. Now,
yeah.
Now, all three of these you had mentioned before about, and I had mentioned also about Vinny and Daryl's father producing and releasing the things. Do you feel that not releasing on a major label may have held the band back a little bit?
Well, you know, we were trying to get a record deal. We were, you know, people coming out and seeing us, but just nobody bit on it, which is, you know, not unheard of. Tons of great artists get turned down, by a million times, by a million people. It just takes one person to take a chance. and then everybody jumps on board. I mean, ultimately, that's how I ended up getting my first record deal, and that's how they got their record deal. Somebody finally took a chance, you know.
Right. Sometimes record companies – go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say we were constantly trying to get a record deal, and you know, lots of people were interested in a young band, but it just didn't happen. But that wasn't the ultimate reason we were doing it. We were just going to keep doing it our way until we broke the door down. And in the meantime, we kept getting all these experiences both in the studio and live and learning how to get better and put on a bigger and better show. Vince was becoming more and more he was becoming a better and better engineer and producer in the studio. So by the time we finished our third record, we were pretty much experienced in how to go in a studio, and yet we're all still little kids, you know. So it trained us. It's basically our training grounds for our entire career, you know.
Nice. Then the I was going to say, you know, sometimes record companies do take a gamble on some groups, and that's how we get groups out there like Cutting Crew and some of the groups that kind of start off pretty quick but fade away very fast. So I think it kind of hurts bands a lot where they may take a risk and they get bit, and all of a sudden they're pulling back everything, you know. I mean, somehow The Outfield has a greatest hits album out there, and I mention this on my show a lot. I don't understand how a band like The Outfield can have a greatest hits album when some bands don't even go signed, you know. You know, the early Pantera sound certainly is one of those tragic, you know, misses that by major record labels.
Well, you know, one interesting thing you say about the early Pantera, to me, Daryl had his tone from the first or second album already on. When you put on that second album, I don't think it sounds very different than anything that he did his entire career. He always had a tone that was very unique. You know, as soon as you hear it, you know it's him. Just like, say, you know, Brian May or Angus Young or Hendrix or Van Halen or whatever. Daryl just had an instant tone. And that was very, you know, to me is interesting in that he came out of the chutes, you know, full on, fully developed with that tone immediately, which was just a blast to be standing next to the guy who could play like that.
Sure, sure. I know my co-host, Alex has a question for you. Alex, go ahead.
Hey, Terry, how are you?
I'm really good. Alex, how are you?
Good. Nice to be talking to you. I'm a big fan of the early Pantera stuff, and I play it a lot on my own show. And one of my favorites is the record I Am the Night, and I wanted to ask you, what are some of the standout tracks on that album for you?
See, my favorite song probably on that album is Come On Eyes. That was a song that I had and brought it, and it was good, but Daryl took it and kind of to the next level and made the guitar sound like it does. We played almost that entire album, though. Some of those songs were crazy things. There's a song on there called Valhalla that that was one that Daryl had the music, and I had some crazy story I was writing about a Viking, you know, gods and stuff, and we just stuck the lyrics on top of his song. I remember that was crazy, and it ended up coming out cool. We were just trying to do the – we weren't trying to reinvent the wheel, but we were trying to push the envelope even more on that record. And let me see. I love those two songs in particular.
Yeah, it seems to me that like there's a lot of variation on that album. You know, you have like real heavy tracks like Down Below,
yeah.
And then you have like some mid-tempo ones like another one of my favorites on there, Daughters of the Queen.
Oh yeah, Vince's dad wrote the lyrics to that. Vince came up with that. Down Below, that was another one that was a blast to play live. You know, we were. All of these records, we were playing them live and figuring out what songs worked and what we liked to do live. And that was another thing. I think by the third album, we had kind of figured out, you know, what things we like to play live. And we would kind of road test them and beta test them, rather, I guess, you know, before we recorded them and find out, what worked and what got the people going. We used to open with Down Below. That was a cool song, yeah.
Right. And I also wanted to ask you, obviously, 2010 saw the loss of a major metal icon, Ronnie James Dio. And I wanted to ask you, how has Ronnie influenced you as a vocalist, if he has?
Yeah, we used to play several of his tunes, as well as some of the Black Sabbath tunes that he was on. And, you know, because when we would be playing, we wouldn't play all originals. We would maybe play some covers, and then we would come out and play an original set, and then we'd play a heavy set. But we played a lot of that stuff, Mob Rules and Neon Nights and stuff like that. That was great music. And also, you know, Vivian Campbell's just amazing on those tracks. And so, we'd end up with some really cool stuff because Daryl could do it justice. And I was just trying to not embarrass myself, you know, but I remember those were great tunes back then.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was definitely a massive loss.
Yeah, no doubt. These guys are a huge influence on anybody who plays loud rock and roll.
Absolutely. Well, Terry, thank you for answering my questions, and I'm going to turn the show back over to Bob.
All right. Now Terry, of course, we spoke about I Am the Night, and Down Below was one of the songs I wanted to ask you about, because it was not only was it on that album, but it was also re-recorded for the fourth Pantera album, Power Metal, by Phil, and I can never pronounce Phil's last name, Anselmo.
Anselmo.
Okay.
Anselmo.
Was the song? Do you think the song was that good that they wanted to put it on two albums, or was it the thing that they wanted to go from one genre to a next, or was it that they really wanted to keep that song going because they really really love that song?
That's my only guess. I never spoke to Daryl or Vince or Rex about that, but all I could figure out is, the song, they felt so strong enough about it that they wanted to not just throw it out the window. You know, after I left, they wanted to talk about the new stuff, you know, and which I can understand. And I was always kind of curious about that, too. Killer song. And
yeah, it is.
That's all I can figure out. I guess it because, you know, it was, like I said, the song that we would open a lot with. So, you know, when they finally ended up doing that next record with Phil, maybe they had just, you know, made it their own. There were several, you know, after I left, they went through a lot of people attempting to be the next singer, and it didn't turn out. I know a lot of people came and went, but when they got Phil, I think they were lucky to get him because, he turned into just this amazing front man. And, I'm a huge fan. So I think they were lucky when they got him.
They were. I love your voice. I'm really more of a 80s type music guy. I like Pantera. I like their other stuff, but I tend to like the first three albums more than I do any of their other stuff, only because I like that sound a lot more than I do the older stuff or the newer stuff. I'm sorry. No,
cool,
I know
cool
a subject. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the cool part is you don't have to pick one or the other. It's cool to be able to have both and get to listen to the same band,
True.
You know. So I'm just glad to be, my name is even in the conversation.
Gotcha. Now, I know a subject that you get asked an awful lot, and I don't want to take up too much time. You're too much. I know it's a tough subject for you. But it was the murder of Dimebag Darrell in 2004. I know it was a blow to you. How difficult was his death on Terry Glaze and as far as your musical career and personally?
I still remember where I was, and I remember the phone ringing. Buddy Blaze, one of our friends, called me and woke me up. And, you know, I just kind of lost my breath. And I turned the television on, turned on the computer, whatever. And kind of just disbelief, you know, like my chest hurt, you know. I'm kind of feeling it now that I'm starting to think about it.
Sure.
Just kind of just shock, you know. I had spoke to, I'd seen Vince only a few months earlier at a show, and Daryl hadn't made it. I want to say it was right after the Damage Plan record. They had been in Europe, and they had just come back, and I was playing a show in Dallas, and Vince came out to see me, and we talked a little bit after the show, and everything was really cool. And I was thinking, you know, I'll get back with these guys, and we'll go hang out. And then at that moment, you know, just thinking, just disbelief. And then all of a sudden, everybody, all the phone calls come, and we all start calling and talking and trying to find out what's going on. Then, you know, a few days later, I don't know exactly how later, the funeral, you know, I fly into Dallas, fly into Arlington, go see, you know, see everybody, and nobody's really talking, and there was a private ceremony, and then there was this big party thing at this big convention center, and then still kind of disbelief, but it wasn't until, I want to say the next day, I went back to the cemetery, and I saw the dirt at the gravesite, and I think that's when it really hit me. You know, it was really heavy. Daryl's body really, he just looked like he was sleeping. Here was this kid with his long hair, with his, you know, his pair of shorts and flip-flops in a Kiss casket. I know Eddie Van Halen put the guitar from, I want to say Van Halen 2, put it in the casket with Daryl. And I've told that story before. They go VH1. But I remember thinking, you know, Daryl and I had talked, you know, really a long time ago about, you know, how much we loved Van Halen and stuff like that. But I know that if somebody would have said, you know, it, when you die, you know, that you get that guitar, I would have been like, go ahead, take me now, man. That's the coolest thing in the world, you know. And, you know, you're seeing all these people, and there's Van Halen, and there's Zakk Wylde, and there's all these people, and and you just kind of don't want to talk to anybody. I watched it all go down, and it was really emotional. And but I don't know. Like I said, the next day I went back to the cemetery. When I saw the dirt, that's when I think like the weight of the world really hit me, and I realized that this is for real. And, you know, us all being from the same hometown there, I've got family in that same cemetery. So I go to that cemetery every time I go back home, you know, and then I walk over and talk to Daryl a little bit. But it's still kind of unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's
also
unbelievable to go ahead.
I was going to say, also, the one of the weird things for me is you look at the pictures of the first three albums, and Daryl looks like he weighs about 130 pounds with a big hairdo, this little skinny little guy.
Right.
And that's how I remember Daryl. So it's funny to me that when I, you know, when I think about him, I think of him as being 18 years old still.
Yeah.
Which is cool, you know.
Yeah, that is good. No, I one of the songs I want to just get back real quick to I Am the Night. One of the songs that really sticks out on this album is one that you already spoke about, Come On Eyes. The vocal range on the song is unbelievable, and the guitar playing by Daryl is also an unbelievable thing. Would you mind if I played it for listeners?
I love it. I love that song. Yeah, play it. Turn it up.
All right. Okay, when we come back, we'll talk about Terry leaving Pantera, joining Lord Tracy and some of the other projects that he has going on. He's an extremely busy guy, and I didn't realize this really until I spoke to him off the air. So we'll get into a little bit more about that. But here, off of Pantera's third album, I Am the Night, is Come On Eyes on All Hail Hair.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to All Hail Hair. Bob Carroll, Francis, and Deal Priest Radio's Alex Alvarez on the air with you tonight. We are joined by our very special guest, the original voice of Pantera, Lord Tracy, and several projects that we're going to bring up in just a few minutes, Mr. Terry Glaze. If you have any questions or comments for us or Terry, make sure you jump on the phone lines at 347-202-0832. Now, Terry, after releasing three albums with Pantera, you decided to leave the group, and they seemed to go on to record a different type of sound. What brought you to the decision to leave?
I don't know. You know, when you're spending so much time with people and you start to get on each other's nerves and you know, just like any relationship, the problems weren't the 2 hours on stage we were playing every night, but it was the other 22 hours of the day trying to get along,
right.
You know. And
It
was never music. It was always outside things, whether it was, you know, outside pressures or people telling you should have more, you deserve better and whatever. But, you know, I just didn't want to continue doing that anymore. And for whatever reason, we ended up splitting and, you know, they kept on going and I kept on going.
Now, how hard was it to walk away?
Is that good enough? I don't want to bring the dirt up.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. No, absolutely, absolutely. How hard was it to walk away from a band that you basically helped create?
Well, I mean, I knew I was never going to find a replacement for Daryl, but the bass player for Lord Tracy, his name's Barney Kinley Wolf. He was
yes.
in Dallas, and I immediately went after him. I had seen him play, and actually he was in a band called Lightning, and they had opened for Pantera for us maybe a year before. We had done a big show in Grand Prairie or whatever. And so I had seen him, and I knew that's what I wanted. And I was getting ready to call him to talk to him about putting a band together. And about that time, the phone rang, and he had a group already, and they called me. And so I went down to their rehearsal hall with every intention of stealing Barney away from these other guys. and so I sat in, and they played a couple tunes, and then we played a song by Cheap Trick, which they did not know was my favorite band in the world, and it just kind of something happened, and I thought, oh, this is awesome. And they said, you want to go to Memphis next week and play a show? And I didn't have anything else to do. I said, yeah. And I thought, I'll, you know, go check it out and I'll steal Barney. And I never left. And that those three guys that turned into Lord Tracy. We were called, I don't even know what we were called. They were called 3D. Actually, they had come out to see Pantera. We were playing Matley's in Dallas. And, I asked them what their name was, and they said Doctors of Death and Demonology. And I just smart-ass said, yeah, 3D. So they called themselves 3D. And we started playing, and it was really cool. And it was Barney was a monster, Chris Craig on drums, Jimmy Rusadoff on guitar. And we just hit it off immediately. Later, we wanted a new name, so we called ourselves Tracy Lords. And we used to put that up on the signs, you know, tonight, Tracy Lords. And at that time, she was fairly famous. And you know, we would have lots of people didn't understand when they came in. We had to explain that she was not playing, that the band was playing. And how that got started.
It was with a Y, not an I. So you did it right,
you know, we got the paint out and made a backdrop and wrote Tracy Lords on it, and we were off and running and playing any place and every place we could.
There you go. Now, my co-host Francis was having a little bit of problems with his Skype, his connection. He wants to ask if you have any. He said there's a bit of a sound to you that you may have a little bit of a punk influence. Were you into any kind of like punk? Punk type bands or punk influences?
That would be more Barney, the bass player, Kinley Wolf.
Okay.
That was him bringing it in. And me mixing in, you know, Elvis and the Beatles and Cheap Trick with his much more heavy attitude songs. He's probably talking about songs like, you know, What You Doing and stuff like that. Yeah, that was Barney trying to push me, you know, to get some more influences.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You now, when we talked earlier off the air, you had spoken about a YouTube video of Barney, and I did get a chance to see that, and that is unbelievable. What that bassist solo that he does with Chris on the drums, that is unbelievable. Yeah. I cannot believe that was a bass he was playing.
I had the best seat every night.
Absolutely, you did. Absolutely. You were absolutely right. And actually, you know, you were talking about some of the best bassists and everything. And for some reason, when I was watching that, it really reminded me a lot of Cliff Burton, the former, you know, the late bassist for Metallica. And, I mean, just really, really, that hit it as close as I could see.
I don't know that Barney ever saw Cliff, but, yeah, those are two of my favorite bass players right there.
Sure. And we have on the phone lines with us, we have a friend of yours named Russ that wants to come on and ask you a question. Russ?
I'm not sure that's a good idea, Bob.
What's up, man?
Hey, Russ.
Hey, Terry. What's going on, buddy?
All good.
You guys were talking earlier about All Over Tonight and you teaming up with Rex after about 25 years. I just wanted to call and tell y'all that there is a video up, and it is on YouTube, and there's also y'all, it's pretty strange that y'all played Come On Eyes. Because there is also a video of that with Rex and Terry 25 years later. You know, that's, you know, basically where, the reason I called was just to remind y'all that that can be seen, and it's pretty awesome to see those two guys back together after 25 years. You know, I've known Terry for, it seems like a lifetime. You know, I've been working with Terry for a long time.
Russ was,
there you go.
Russ was with me in Pantera days. He ended up turning in to the drum tech for Lord Tracy. And at the beginning of all that, Russ was best man at my wedding. So
that's cool.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'll let y'all go, man. This is about Terry, man. It's not about me. But anyway, check out the videos All Over Tonight and Come On Eyes.
All right. Talk to you later, Russ.
Russ, I appreciate you calling.
Bye, buddy. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye.
Take care. Actually, you said that. That's not a good idea. Actually, it scared me a little bit. I thought, oh, crap, this is going to be somebody that you really don't want to talk to. But thanks, Russ, for calling in. Now, with Lord Tracy, how long was it before you guys were discovered by a record label?
Not very long. We actually got signed before Pantera did. I don't know the dates. I want to say you said 85, 86, something like that. I was in Lord Tracy for about a year, and we used to drive back and forth to Memphis almost every other weekend to go play shows at this bar in Memphis called the Stage Stop, which they were like it was like our mom. She would just put up with us and let us play, and we were playing, and we were doing originals from the very beginning. I mean, after Lord Tracy, I just wanted to play originals. We played some covers, but we worked on our songs immediately. And we're playing a show, and a guy from Chrysalis, Paul Burton, became a friend of mine.
Wow, okay.
He was in town to see a different act in Memphis, and not us. And at the last moment, this person had to cancel the show. And so Paul was in town, and he thought, well, I might as well go. I'm here. And asked around, walked in to our bar where we were playing, and within 30 minutes he just said, you guys are the greatest thing I've ever seen, I want to sign you, and that was the one person that we needed to take a chance. The next week there were two or three different labels there to see us, and within a week or so later after that I was in New York going around meeting record people and eating Chinese food in the same room with Depeche Mode and at a concert, in a limo with VH1 and MTV, and it was just really weird. It happened really fast, and it took was that one person to tip the domino, and then everybody was worried about missing out, and we got a deal really quickly. We eventually picked Uni, which was supposed to be a little independent wing of of MCA. And
okay.
We were the first American rock band signed by this little division. And we thought, politically, they have to push us. We're going to get the push. We're going to get the backing. This is what we need. And we did the record. We were one of six bands on the label, and everything was looking good. And right before our record came out, MCA got bought, I want to say, by Irving Azoff. They dissolved Uni. We became one of 600, and all the people who had worked on our record were not there anymore, and our record got handed over to the marketing department with 600 bands, and it was all Belle Biv DeVoe and Fine Young Cannibals. And and if you've ever seen Spinal Tap, that's what we were in.
Yes, I have.
It was Kick My Ass, Marty Fluffkin. It was really that. And that's why, you know, when we get together and watch Spinal Tap, we still cry, because it's, you know, it feels so personal.
It's funny.
I know. Now, sad and funny all at the same time. I'm laughing on the inside.
Now, you guys seem to get a bit more attention and started to play a lot of clubs as Lord Tracy. What was even in Pantera, what was the road life like for you guys in the 80s? It had to be wild in the 80s being in a band, especially being the lead vocalist.
It was crazy wild. Rex and Daryl roomed together, and I don't think they ever slept. I roomed with Vince, and, you know, we were young and stupid, and it was the 80s, and we were in a band, and chicks dug it, and, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Sure, sure. Now,
you know, it was crazy. It was really good fun. We got in a lot of trouble. It was a lot of fun.
Now, I'm sure that you know, you've already pretty much asked. One of my next questions is going to be about the advertising of Lord Tracy, whether the venues that you signed with to play used your history with Pantera to advertise that you were coming there as vocalist.
I don't think so.
No?
It wasn't, because Pantera wasn't big yet. They were just coming out with their new record. We crossed paths a couple times. I remember we were both playing in Ohio, playing clubs coming up after both of our records came out. So it really wasn't it wasn't something that was helping at that time. You know, years later, now the Pantera connection is always a big help for me. But back then, on a national scene, you know, both of us were fighting just to get our name out there at all, and there wasn't much national buzz on either band.
Okay. Now, in 1989, Lord Tracy released Deaf Gods of Babylon, and included in this release was a song called Piranha, which actually gets a bunch of hits on YouTube. And although it's actually not a video, it's just, you know, the album cover and the song playing. And people, of course, commenting that they love the song. Did you ever think that this song would become, of course, you know, back when you wrote it, the internet was very young, but did you ever think that this would be one of the biggest hits on YouTube, this song?
No. You know, the real story behind that song is everybody, I was coming out of playing really, really heavy music, and at that time it seemed like all the heavy bands were so serious and so taking themselves too serious, I thought.
There you go.
And so that was pretty much me taking the piss out of all the really heavy, fast bands. And so that's where that comes from. And I just was trying to just crack a smile and maybe a little sarcasm on the heaviest, you know, badass type of a music. And that's kind of where that came from. It's not that I was trying to totally make fun of it, but at the same time, I did have to see the humor in it. And that's what Lord Tracy, I think Lord Tracy was more coming out of the Van Halen school of being great musicians and yet having a lot of fun and having a party. And that's kind of where that was come, as opposed to trying to be the fastest, heaviest, most leather, most spikes, whatever everybody else was doing.
Yeah. No, it's funny that people also say they like the sounds at the end of that song, too. It's actually really funny what you hear at the end of that song.
Let me tell you what I don't know that anybody knows what that is. I remember that noise, the bubbles at the end.
Right, right.
Our producer on that record was Mark Dodson, this British guy, mm-hmm. this great guy who had done some Anthrax and I want to say Metal Church and some other things. And the day he
awesome
that's
man.
Him recording that, I walked into the control room and I saw Mark leaned over the console there with a straw. And I got to say, my first thought was something bad with drugs. And I thought, oh, no.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, he had a styrofoam cup and a microphone, and he was blowing bubbles into a cup and recording it. And that's what that is. That's Mark. Now, part two of the story about Mark, Mark was left-handed and could not play guitar. And the first solo on Piranha, I believe, is Mark playing.
Wow.
Jimmy was trying to play something, and Mark kept going, that's not, no, no, no. And finally Jimmy, out of frustration and trying to mess with Mark, said, you do it. And so I believe that's first take, Mark playing an upside-down guitar and not knowing how to play guitar, and it
Jesus.
Seemed like that was the perfect idea for the song that we were trying to take the piss out of everybody else too. So that's Jimmy at the end, but that's Mark Dodson on guitar on the first, probably uncredited. But yeah, blowing bubbles and guitar, lead guitar. So that's a pretty big credit for Mark Dodson.
That is, because you know what people think that is at the end. They think it's someone with a bong. And
yep.
My thought was, when I first heard him, my thought was, you're saying about Piranha, so you're thinking, you're sounding, my thought was, it's someone going down into the Piranhas. It's, you know, they're the bubbles from the breathing. I'm not much of a dork that I didn't even think about a bong. So.
Well, I don't like to tell everybody what things mean. I like it when everybody
right.
can come up with their own ideas.
There you go.
But hell, if that's what gets you excited, you know, that's all good. Makes it better.
There you go. See, my thought was it was a really hot looking girl whose bikini was getting eaten off at that point. So that's my thing. So
that's it too.
That'll be my dream.
We need to have people make their own videos for these songs so we can see what other crazy stuff people come up with.
There you go. Now, one of the most popular songs off of Deaf Gods of Babylon is the song Out with the Boys, and the song is a typical 80s sound, singing about the good times and of course, women. The video proves this even further. Where was the video filmed, and just as much, you guys look like you were having so much fun filming that. Was that really, you guys really were having that much fun filming that video?
Lord Tracy did that every day.
There you go.
They shot that video in the same strip club where Motley Crue had just done the Girls, Girls, Girls video. We hired a bunch of models from Playboy. They all came down, and they just played that song over and over and over again. And we shot that video for hours and hours, and it was a big, sweaty party. And that's how that came out. It's exactly what it looks like on tape. Yes. We were not very savvy business-wise. We constantly did the wrong thing. You know, I remember doing a photo shoot out of Venice Beach, and they took us out and fixed us all up and did makeup and did hair and everything. And before the photographer could take a picture, we went and jumped in the ocean. And they were furious, you know, but that's kind of what we did. We were, you know, self-destructive on the marketing part of the show, you know, but we had a lot of fun.
Nice. You know, and I wanted to play that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, that's all 89, and that's Guns N' Roses time and Poison time and big hair and all of that stuff, and we were just kind of, we didn't want to do that. And, you know, there were several forces that tried to put us into that box, but we just didn't want to do that. We wanted the music, and we wanted to be more organic, I guess so. You know, the funny part, thinking about it, looking back, though, is that, you know, about 2 years from that is when Nirvana changed the whole universe, you know.
Sure.
And that's when everything turned upside down.
Yeah, now how much did that, you know, I ask this of a lot of people that I have on my shows, you know, of course, All Hell Hair, we deal with a lot of the bands from the 80s into the early 90s, and one of the staple questions was, how bad did, you know, I was never a fan of I mean, there were a couple different bands that came out of that, Soundgarden, you know, a couple bands that came out of that genre that I kind of liked and kind of have made it, but... how bad did that hurt guys like you that really kind of had to not well, I shouldn't say guys like you, but bands that came out during that era and hurt that genre of bands because they were forced to make a change into a different type of music if they really didn't want to do it. How bad did it hurt you?
It wasn't so bad for me, but I can imagine how, you know, at that time, not being able to play became, you know, something that some people liked. And,
sure.
You know, for musicians who had been working their whole life to get good, sometimes when we would hear some of the bands that came out there that couldn't really play that well, or, you know, it was a strange thing to kind of be feeling like, I can't believe that they're playing this stuff when, you know, when these other things are so much better. Although I got to say, the excess of the late 80s, it was time to, you know, it was time to burn
yeah.
off some of the dead, you know, the dead debris or
sure.
anything. You say Soundgarden,
sure.
you know, Soundgarden and Nirvana, I still, that stuff, the first time I heard it, I just thought, man, this new thing's coming. You better get with it or get out of the way. Cause, you know, Dave Grohl and Matt Cameron both, you know, that's some of the greatest drumming ever.
Yeah, no, see, I was never a big fan of Nirvana, but I like bands like Stone Temple Pilots,
and
I didn't mind.
Me too.
You know, I mean, I think they kind of, Nirvana kind of changed things. I think bands like Soundgarden and Stone Temple Pilots kind of kept the rock going. And
yes.
That's why I don't, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I say I agree 100%. Nirvana was, like I said, a change in the universe. The other things,
yes.
maybe not as much. You say Stone Temple Pilots. That's one of my all-time favorite bands. And when you listen to
oh, yeah.
any of my projects, I mean, they're a huge influence, production-wise and the guitar-wise, and the bass player is just so amazing. Yeah, I love those records.
Yeah. And you know, favorite movies from the 90s featured a whole lot of that sound, and that was The Crow, you know, where of course Brandon Lee, he was killed during the filming of that, but that soundtrack there with you know, they had Stone Temple Pilots, The Cure, Helmet, you know, just that band, and that actually, that sound right there was fine with me. Coming out of the 80s, that was a fine sound with me.
Yeah, I love that stuff too. Helmet, some killer guitarists, great drumming. Yeah, I remember a lot of that stuff.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. Now, with Laura Tracy, you mentioned that you know the band itself was sort of wrapped around the porn star Tracy Lords. Did you guys ever run into any kind of trouble from her or from any of her people or any of her you know, the people that she worked for with the name before you changed it to Laura Tracy?
We got signed as Tracy Lords, and we were in the
okay.
studio as Tracy Lords. We even contacted her through her attorney. I wanted to get her to come in and have like a cameo vocal on one of my songs. Laura Tracy was a lot of tongue-in-cheek, fun stuff. And it was pretty
sure.
vulgar and pretty, it's not politically correct anymore, some of the stuff we used to do.
Yeah,
you know, back in those days, that's where some of those rap bands coming out of Florida were really, you know, over the top. And
yeah.
and I was kind of taking some of that and mixing it with, you know, our hard rock stuff. But there's a song on Deaf Gods called She's a Bitch. And I just thought
mm-hmm.
it would be great to have Tracy Lords having a cameo vocal on She's a Bitch. She didn't think, she saw it more like she was going to be the lead vocalist and this was going to be another avenue for her. I think she was trying to get in and recording. It didn't work out. They threatened us, and we thought we better come up with a new name. And once again, names are the hardest thing for us. And ultimately, my brother-in-law said the most obvious thing in the world. He goes, why don't you just turn it around and call it Lord Tracy? And we thought it was the dumbest thing.
There you go.
And the more we thought about it, we thought it was so brilliant. And it had been there the whole time. And that's where the name Lord Tracy, we used to go on the radio and make up all kinds of stories about, you know, a British lord and all of this stuff. But, you know, it was all just fun making up stories and trying to mess with people.
Nice. We have a caller, Ryan from Arkansas, who has a question for you. Ryan? Ryan?
Hi, Jerry. I understand you're a fellow Arkansan.
Hey, Ryan. How's it going?
Pretty good. I understand you're a fellow Arkansan.
I'm trying to hear you. Breaking up a little bit. Say it again.
I might be having some problems with this. Yeah, we're still here. You're breaking up real bad. Okay, we'll try and get him back on the air with us. I wanted to play for some reason I don't have it loaded here, but I wanted to play Out with the Boys and I don't have it loaded here. I'm not sure, that was an oversight on my part. I apologize for that. But let me just get into a little bit more of Lord Tracy. You guys lasted, or Lord Tracy lasted until the early 90s, and when the band went on a bit of a hiatus. What made you guys take a break?
Once again, kind of like Pantera, it wasn't the music. It was the business part and the other 22 hours of the day. And
sure.
I was trying to force a change in the direction we were going. And nobody could come to an agreement, so I ended up just leaving. And, you know,
okay.
Didn't want to, but like I said, it came down to a decision of, are we going to, you know, fork in the road, and what are we going to do? And it wasn't going anywhere, you know, satisfactory for me. So I tried to force it, didn't work, ended up going home. And just like with Lord Tracy, the phone rang, and it turned into the next band. And before I know it, 6 months later, I was out in L.A. with the next band.
Now, during the time that you took that break, you stayed pretty busy. Talk about the project that you were involved with Mike. You told me what his name was earlier, and I'm sorry, I'm going to screw this up again. Malinin, I'm sorry. Of the Goo Goo Dolls. Malinin.
Yeah,
no.
Got that band together with all these guys from Dallas. We ended up moving out to L.A. where I had an apartment, and
mm-hmm.
we started going in the studio and recording. We probably recorded 20 tunes. We had a killer band, and I had collected a lot of songs for the next Lord Tracy album, and so I was ready to roll. That band was Mike Malinin on drums, Dave Heineman on guitars, and Rob Cooper on bass. It was a killer band. We had a band called Blowfish, and we came back
okay.
through Texas a couple times and played, and Mike Malinin at that time was this unknown drummer, but I just thought he was the greatest thing I'd ever heard. And we were out in L.A., and that went for a couple years, and when we didn't get signed, Mike got an opportunity to become a member of Goo Goo Dolls, and it was his favorite band. And
okay.
at that time, Goo Goo Dolls were punk, and he loved that stuff. And then he gets in the band, and then I guess became successful, but the music changed, and they stopped being punk and started doing power ballads and making money, and he's still there, but I don't think it didn't turn out the way we all thought it was going to turn out.
Nice. Now, in 2004, Lord Tracy regrouped and released a live record called Live in 2004, and also two studio albums, Call None in 2004 and Lord Tracy 4 in 2005. What brought you guys back together?
We had all had enough time away from each other that all of our differences and all the scars and everything, I guess, had started to heal a little bit. And we started talking, and people started kind of leaving messages for each other. And I want to say Jimmy or Chris started to reach out about what if we got together and did a show. And it was one of those where everybody said, well, I'll do it, but, you know, that other guy, he'll never agree. And that kind of was going around, and then it just kind of happened. The live album, that was – all three of those records were tapes that we had from the early 90s that we just never did anything with.
Okay.
The live album is a live radio broadcast from maybe that same period when Deaf Gods came out. And then, let's see, the four album was a bunch of demos that we were working on before when we never did the next official Lord Tracy album. The Cole Nunn record was a bunch of horse shit that we were going to put out and send out to our fans, our fan club. And it was the most crazy-ass shit, and it never got put out. And we found it. We found the recordings, and we were like, we have to put this out. And all of it is just us in the studio being – it was so ridiculous. And it's some of my favorite stuff because it just makes you crack up and smile. We were just having so much fun. It was like, you know, going in the studio and just doing anything at any moment and improvising stuff. And there's just some truly horrible stuff on that record that's played by great musicians. You know,
nice.
But that's where that's coming from. It was supposed to be like a special, you know, thing that we were going to send out only to people who were, you know, in our club. And that's where it came from. We put those records out, and then we thought, you know, we ought to do a show. And we did that, and then we played some really cool shows, and it just started to build. You know, we'd do a little reunion show, one off here, one off there, and that eventually led to us going back in the studio, and that's where the Porn Again record came from.
We have Ryan back on the line with us, who was on earlier, but had some difficulties. Ryan, are you with us?
Yeah, that's a lot better. Not cutting out now.
There you go. There you go.
Hey, Terry, how are you?
I'm really good. Hey, Ryan.
Now, I understand you lived in Arkansas at one point, didn't you?
Not me. Maybe somebody else you're thinking.
Okay, well, anyway, this kind of leads me into my question. I'm going to name drop a little bit. I was wondering how my friend Sharp Dunaway has influenced your career.
Sharp Dunaway, hugely awesome DJ out of Little Rock, and was always a big supporter of us and played our records and got us a lot of opportunities throughout Little Rock. He's a great guy.
Didn't he introduce you to Rocklahoma a couple years ago?
Say that again?
Didn't he introduce you guys at Rocklahoma a couple years ago?
Yeah. We did Rocklahoma a year and a half ago, I guess. Yeah, that was when Rocklahoma, we played, it must have been 120 degrees, and we played it like 1 in the morning, and Sharp and, help me, the other DJ.
Jeff Allen.
Yeah. That was a great night. We had a great time there. Super hot rock show. It was great. It was all those 80s bands with big hair and leather in, you know, 120 degree weather. It was a sight to see, to watch them melt.
I was there.
Oh God, that was awesome, wasn't it?
a little bit too hot for me though.
Oh my God, you can't imagine what it was like on stage. And we didn't go on till, like I said, 1 in the morning, and still the heat just took your breath away and put you down on the ground. It was crazy. We ended up playing till 2 in the morning, and we got done. They ran everybody out, and the promoter come up and said, wow, do y'all want to play again in the morning? And we said, yeah. And so, you know, 10 hours later, 3 hours of sleep, we showed up and played another set, and it was just a blast, but it was a big, sweaty, smelly rock show. It was really cool.
All right, well, thanks for answering my question, Terry. Good talking
to
you.
Sure, Ryan. Hey, I hope I see you next time. That was cool you were at that show.
I wasn't able to see you guys, I don't think, because I went on Sunday, and I can't remember what day you guys played, but I tried to make it up there, but I thought you guys played on Sunday, but I found out that there was – you guys play on like Saturday or something like that, so I wasn't able to catch you. But next time that you guys are in the area, you know, I've noticed that you've done quite a few shows in Little Rock. I'll make it out there.
Sure. I'll see you next time, Ryan.
All right, man. Good talking to you.
Thanks.
All right.
Hey, Bob.
All right. Yes.
I was going to say,
with,
can I say one thing?
Go ahead. Yes.
All you guys, when you call in, lie next time and say something like, oh, yeah, that was awesome.
I saw you, and I stood in line for 3 hours.
Oh, my God, it was amazing.
No, I know in 2008 you guys released, Lord Tracy released Porn Again, your first, like you said, your first studio album in several years. What was it like to make that album? You know, and how did you guys realize that you had an album right there that you wanted to put together and put out?
There was no plan, typical. We had been getting together and doing reunion shows over the past year or two, and I was looking for another excuse to get to hang out with the guys. And so I had a bunch of songs, and I think I sent like 10 songs to Barney, and he picked out 5 he liked, and we sent those to the drummer. And we showed up in the studio, and we recorded 5 songs. And then, you know, well, let's do it again because it was so much fun. I should probably mention, too, that before this, Jimmy Ruzadoff had bowed out after our last – we had this big show in Little Rock, this big outdoor big thing. I can't remember what it was. And so Jimmy was not playing with us anymore. And one of our friends, Brian Harris, stepped in, and he's been the guitar player with Lord Tracy since then. And there really wasn't any audition. Brian had been out on the road with Lord Tracy back in, say, 90 or 91. Jimmy had had appendicitis and on the road, and Brian had saved the day and swooped in. And so we already knew we could hang with Brian. And so that's where he came from. And so Brian is playing all the lead guitar on the Porn Again album. But we did a session with no goal, and then we did another session, and it kind of was coming out good. And so we just kept going, and before you knew it, we had 15 songs. We finished them all up, and then we were lucky enough to get Neil Kernan, this producer, mixer guy based out of Chicago. Barney and I went up to Chicago and mixed the album with Neil. Interesting thing to me about Neil is that I thought I had never met the guy before, but it turns out he was sitting there busting my chops because back in 89, he had been one of the producers that we had interviewed to do the Deaf Gods record. And, you know, I met the guy, and he says, I said, well, what have you done? And he says, well, I did the new Dokken, and I did Queensryche. Well, I didn't like that, so I just kind of tuned Neil out, and I bailed on the whole conversation. Little did I know, he didn't tell me that he had engineered on Queen albums and Peter Gabriel and Hall & Oates and all of these Sex Pistols and stuff. But in that moment, he had thought, since I was out of Pantera, that he should, you know, name drop heavy acts. But he didn't know that, you know, if he would have said I did Queen and I did Peter Gabriel and Sex Pistols and Hall & Oates, I would have got on my knees and begged him to do our album. So he had said how, you know, we were one of the only bands he ever wanted to work with that told him no. And he always remembered that. And he had been a fan still. So here it had kind of come full circle in 20 years, and Barney and I are in this studio mixing the record with Neil, and it was just really strange. Just shows you, you know, small world.
You know what's funny? You know, you've mentioned Dokken, and they were kind of popular in the 80s, but I don't really know anybody that liked them because I was always a fan of that type of sound, but I never liked Dokken, and it wasn't really – the band. It was really Don Dokken that I did not like his voice. I didn't like the way he sang, but I'm a huge fan of Lynch Mob, which is, of course, is the George Lynch, the lead guitarist of Dokken. I always loved the guitar sound of Dokken. But I don't understand how Dokken. Go ahead.
I can tell you a Pantera Dokken story that cracks me up.
Okay.
We were opening, when I was in Pantera, we were opening for Dokken up in Sherman or something like that. I don't know. And we got there in the middle of the day, and this guy was up there working on the guitars all day. I thought it was his guitar tech. Turns out it was George Lynch, and he was the nicest guy in the world. And
sure.
We met
sure.
the drummer, and he was the nicest guy in the world. And we met the bass player, and he was the nicest guy in the world. So the place is packed. And we did our show, and we just crushed that night because we were so hyped up to play open for Dokken. And we came off stage, and I walked off down the hallway, and that night I remember I was wearing these red spandex. They were like red and black stripes. And
okay.
It was really, in hindsight, it was hideous. But it was back then, it was really cool. It was really cool.
Sure.
And we walked down the hall. I saw the door open. Don Dokken, who I'd never seen yet, opens the door. He looks at me in the eyes, and then he looks down and looks at my pants. And I looked at him, and I looked down, and he was wearing the same pair of pants. And he was so pissed. And I just felt so triumphant that I had, you know, I was the reason probably Don had to change his pants that night. But after, you know, I'm feeling the same as you on the vocals, though. But they were kick-ass. At the end of the night, we hung out with George and Jeff Pilson and the drummer. We didn't hang with Don, but we did hang with the band, and they were so cool. But, yep,
yeah.
I was wearing the same pair of pants as Don Dokken.
Nice.
Funny stuff.
And you made him change.
Oh, what are you going to do? Great. He was so mad. It was great.
Now, the one of these songs off of Lord Tracy, "Porn Again," is the song "Jinx." Do you want to tell us what that song is about?
I don't even remember. you know, we'll have to get everybody else to tell us what it's about.
There you go. Do you mind if I play that real quick?
I love that tune. That'd be cool.
All right. Here is Jinx off of Porn Again, 2008, released by Lord Tracy.
So much.
to All Hail Hair on the Fighting Words Radio Network. Bob Carroll, Francis, and Dio Priest Radio, Alex Alvarez, live with you tonight with our very special guest, Terry Glaze, the original sound or original voice of Pantera, the lead vocals of Lord Tracy, and his own very special solo stuff. And Terry, I want to thank you. I know that we had you on very borrowed time, and I know we're into overtime with you tonight. I know that you're practicing with your band tonight, and I really want to thank you. I know all of us here want to thank you, including our listeners, for being on so long with us.
It's been my pleasure, Bob. I've enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And I want to get into something that you sent me. We talked about a little bit earlier. Some of your solo stuff and some of the stuff that you sent me recently is one of the songs is called Famous, and that's by a project that you have called Raised by Gods. Tell us a little bit about this project.
Raised by Gods is a duo. It's myself and one of my best friends, a drummer, Mike Harrington. I've been working on this record, you know, for 5 years in between all my other projects I've been finishing. Mike's a drummer who lives in Los Angeles, and I'm located out on the East Coast now. The strange part about our record, the way we work, is Mike sets up his drum kit in L.A., sits down and records drums. And in his head, he's hearing some song, some arrangement or whatever, but he records the drums. And then he sends them to me on the East Coast. And then I listen to his drums, and I get inspired, and I write my songs to his drums, and I play all the instruments. And then when I get done, when it's finished, I send it back to Mike, and he ends up hearing a song that he's never heard before in his life that he's playing drums on. And it's really weird.
Nice.
And it's been so inspiring. It's such it's my favorite project I've done over the last 5, 6, 7 years. And we've put out lots of little demo records on iTunes called Mike and Terry. This new record was just more of the Mike and Terry stuff. And through the connection with Neil Kernan in Chicago, he heard the tapes and offered to mix them for me, and the record came out better than any of us could have imagined, and that's when we decided that it deserved a new name, and that's why we ended up changing the project to Raised by Gods. And so it's me playing everything, Mike's on drums, actually Barney Kenley Wolf, the bass player from Lord Tracy, he is playing bass on two songs on the record. The record hasn't come out yet. And we're just starting to figure it out. There's a Raised by Gods Facebook page with a couple tunes on it. There's a raisedbygods.com that you can kind of hear a couple of the tunes. But it's brand new. It's not out yet. But that's the one thing that I'm really excited about right now.
Now, when you and I talked off the air, you mentioned that you play most of instruments on this song that we're going to play in a little bit, Famous. How much training have you had on all these, or is this something that you just kind of picked up over the years?
I think after moving to the East Coast from L.A., recording, I just kind of out of necessity had to start learning how to play other instruments besides just guitar. I started off when I was a young kid on piano and couldn't sit still, and moved to guitar, and then eventually moved to a cordless microphone, jumping around being ADD or hyper or whatever. And so that's where that came from. So I had my first instrument was piano, and the bass wasn't that much harder, you know, to start to figure it out, just through trial and error. And over the years of just doing the process of recording, I've got a studio down in the basement and, you know, work on music every day. I can't play drums, and it's one thing every band I've ever been in, I've been fortunate enough to have a really good drummer. And that's where Mike comes in. And he's just an amazing person as well as a musician.
You know, I got to tell you, when you told me that was recording and then it was put together,
One of the things that really sticks out on the song is the drums and how well the drums actually fit into this song. I'm really seriously impressed with the drumming and the sound that's behind it and how well it feels like the backbone of the song.
I appreciate that. You know, the one thing by us working, you know, ass backwards is that I play to the drums. And so, you know, the drums are the most important thing to make it groove. And so he's not trying to fit the drums to the song. I write the songs to his drum beats. And it's unconventional, and I think it's really cool, weird. But I think that's one of the reasons how we get our own sound and our own kind of unique thing that we've got going.
Okay. Nice. Now, let me ask you, besides Raised by Gods, will there be future, do you think there'll be future records coming up or albums coming up from Lord Tracy?
I hope so. I hope so. That would be awesome. I'm actually going in the studio next Sunday, I think, in Dallas with Barney and Brian and another drummer named Taz Bentley. We're doing another new thing. So it probably doesn't make the most business sense, but I got an opportunity to go in and record with some more great musicians. So hopefully that'll turn into something too. But I'm always working on several different things at the same time. Mike and Terry, the Raised by Gods, we've got enough material for two more albums right now if we'd ever record another thing.
Wow.
The tracks are just sitting there waiting to be done. But I don't want to get ahead of myself on that project because I want to give these songs, an opportunity to have their moment or, you know, let them get out there. But hopefully, you know, I just keep getting to play with really good musicians. That's my goal.
Now, is there any talk about a reunion? I know even though Daryl is no longer with us, is there any talk about a reunion with the rest of the guys for Pantera?
Oh, I wouldn't ever see that coming. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, Phil is the vocalist for Pantera, and, you know, that would be up to those three guys. But knowing them how I do, I would say the chances of that are, you know, pretty much zero. Daryl's irreplaceable, and I think there's still too much I don't know what the word is, but there's not a lot of hugging going on between all of them right now, still to this point, which is a shame. Hopefully someday they'll all be able to understand that they're all brothers and they're all actually, they owe everything they have. Every one of us owes a big part of what we have to being lucky enough to be in a band with Daryl. You know, that's where I got my start, and that's where those guys, you know, as far as I'm concerned, those guys owe everything to being in a band with Daryl, you know.
Okay. That is a big thing that you can always hang your hat on. No matter what happens in the future, you were part of a group that had one of the greatest guitar players ever. And also with Barney, one of the greatest bass players ever. So
I always wondered if we would have got a band with Vince and Daryl and me and Barney, but I just don't know if there would have been enough space for all of the notes, you know. It would have been something crazy like, you know, Billy Sheehan and Steve Vai or something like that. But I have been really fortunate to get to play with some of the greatest musicians on the planet. Daryl is though still by far my favorite guitar player I've ever played with ever, you know. And I've been lucky to play with a bunch of people, but he was one of a kind.
Now, what lies ahead in the future of Terry Glaze?
Trying to get this Raised by Gods record out. A lot of these songs, with Mike being in L.A., we've never actually played live before. So I'm hoping that I can get out to the West Coast and we can play some shows with Mike. The guys in Dallas, we're going to play some of these Raised by Gods Tunes next Friday in Dallas. I'm playing a show there. I play music here on the East Coast with a couple different bands, and basically I'm just lucky enough to get to play music every day. And so keep writing, keep recording, keep playing, and hopefully, I mean, that's really all I want to do. You know, I feel so lucky to get to do that at all.
Now, hopefully, you know, you mentioned, you know, talk about Raised by Gods going forth, and hopefully we can get you back on the air. I really appreciate you coming on the air, and I had a great time, and, you know, you're an awesome singer, and everything we played tonight, it really is one of my favorite things to listen to. And, of course, the song Famous that I'm going to play here in a second is an awesome song. It's one of these songs that kind of sticks with you right away. I really appreciate you sending it to me. I'm going to play it. But hopefully when you get everything together and you start to put out an album that we can get back together and have you back on the air with us.
I would love to, you know, get an opportunity to get this music out there and help spread the word. The Famous tune, I think it was kind of inspired by all of the, you know, the shows on TV like American Idol and Dancing with the Stars and all that stuff. And I think that's where the idea of the tune came from, basically people just being so desperate for fame. And I think that's where I initially got inspired on this song. But
sure.
That, and I think I plugged into some weird fuzz box and I got a weird tone and it sent me onto this song. And the two things combined ended up, I got lucky and caught something that's kind of hooky and kind of cool. So that's what this is. This is Famous is Mike Harrington on drums and me making all the rest of the noises and Neil Kernan making it sound good.
Now, what at the very end of the song, it sounds like the end of an Ozzy Osbourne thing. What is it? What are you actually saying at the end of the song?
That's a Mellotron, and I found some weird samples on there, and just pushing some buttons, and not knowing what I was doing, and that's where it came out, kind of like a happy accident.
It sounds good.
A lot of my stuff is like that, not exactly knowing what I'm doing and pushing buttons and not reading manuals and kind of just feeling my way in the dark and trying to find something cool and also doing stuff wrong. You know, this stuff wasn't recorded in some big monster studio with a whole crew of engineers. It was me plugging in mics and turning on a record button and seeing what kind of weird sounds I could get.
Gotcha. Now, Terry, what would you want to say to not only the rock world but the rest of the world regarding Terry Glaze?
One of the luckiest guys you're ever going to meet. I get to play music every day, and I try not to take it for granted, and I know how lucky I am. You can find me at terryglaze.com. You can find me on Facebook and find me wherever, raisedbygods.com. And, check it out and send me a message, and hopefully we can meet up and play some tunes.
There you go. And I know we still have Alex. Alex, anything before we go?
Thank you for coming on the show tonight, Terry. It's been a pleasure for sure.
Thanks, Alex. Hopefully I'll get on your show.
Yeah, I'll definitely email you, and we can make that happen.
All right, cool. I'll see you down the road then.
Absolutely.
Cool.
So, Terry, I want to thank – go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, Bob, thanks for having me on. I did not know what I got myself into, but it's been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and like I said to you off air, you know, one of the biggest thrills of my life is when I was, you know, close to stage and one of the guys would point to me. And now I get to talk to guys like you that are one of the guys that pointed to me that I really looked up to. And I really appreciate you taking the time. I mean, I know we only had you on very borrowed time, and I took you over an hour and 45 minutes now. And I really, really appreciate you taking the time out to speak with us. Big fans of yours.
No worries. I mean, we're just lucky to have guys like you playing music and keeping it alive out there for everybody.
Thank you very much. And hopefully we'll talk to you very soon, and we'll keep in touch with you and get you, you know, certainly get you on Alex's show, and certainly get to love to have you back one more time and or two more times or whatever it takes to get your new stuff out there, Raised by Gods out there to the fans, and thank you very much again.
All right, thanks, Bob. I'll talk to you soon, and cheers, everybody.
Sounds good. All right. I want to end the show tonight with the latest by Terry Glaze. This is Raised by Gods. It's a song called Famous, and like he said, you know, Mike Harrington is playing drums, but he's playing all the rest of the instruments, and this is a really, really good song. So we'll see you guys next Friday night when we're going to have Aaron from Brave Words and Bloody Knuckles, the person who is the webmaster and owner of that website, with us on the show. And I want to thank Alex. Alex, one more time, let our listeners know how to tune into your show.
Well, it's the D.O. Priest radio show, which is heard right here on a Blog Talk Sunday through Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, and, of course, Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. And be sure to tune in, if I just can just bring this up real quick. Be sure to tune in to the D.O. Priest radio show one-year anniversary, which will be airing Thursday, December 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern, along with the launching of the D.O. Priest Network.
Nice. And, Francis, I know we have your show coming up on San Clemente Punk coming up on Monday night. Let us know who's going to be on the show Monday night.
I actually have a punk pioneer on the show. Actually, one of the biggest names in punk rock. I have Keith Morris, founding member of Black Flag, Circle Jerks, and now of Off. He's going to be my guest. So it's actually going to be a really big show.
All right. And we're going to end the show tonight, like I said, with Raised by Gods, Famous. Thank you, everyone, for listening in, including Ryan Harmon, Russ calling in. We have Noel listening in, and I want to thank you guys once more, and look for Raised by God. You guys are going to love this new song, Famous, and we'll see you guys next week on All Hail Hair, part of Fight More Radio.